How is everyone on this rainy, cold night, on Friday night? Doing okay? Welcome everyone. I'm delighted to welcome you to this event. My name is Brian Hamilton. I am the chair of the Pacific Screenwriting Program, and I'm honored to celebrate and kick off the first of what we hope will be many jointly organized and sponsored events between the PSP on the screenwriting side and the DGC on the directing side. So give it up for that collaboration, because I think it's, I think that it's easy to compartmentalize, but both of our organizations are aligned in terms of boosting the voice and the reach of our local creative community. And so many of you are both writers and directors, identify in both areas and more. And so we just think that we as a group should be doing more together, because why draw a line, right? So anyway, that's part of the theme. And after that, I would just like to say thank you to the DGC for being the initiator of this, and we're honored to have Jem talk to us about her incredible project. So without further ado, I'm going to give over the stage to Zach and Jem. Welcome.
Thank you. So super excited to have this night to talk about both writing and directing, and it's the fusion and kind of the career path along the way. And very excited and honored to be able to kind of have a discussion with Jem. Jem has been, for anyone who doesn't know Jem and hasn't been able to get to know her, has kind of rocketed through Vancouver's film scene and quickly become one of the rising stars that we have. She's come from London, but she's now a Canadian, and she's here.
I am Canadian.
And, and I think she has the record of fastest time from Crazy Eights film to showrunner, which is 5 years. So Allie, who's here tonight, just got in the top six of the Crazy Eights. So, so in 5 years, maybe in 4 years, you'll be a showrunner, and you'll beat the record. So, I got to know Jem. The very first time I ever met her was on the show I did with Brian, asking Jem if she wanted to shadow, to which she said, "Fuck no, I want to direct on your show. I don't want to shadow." And a year later, she was nominated for an Emmy for her work on the show. So, really amazing, you know. Now, as you all know, and the reason we're here is to talk about her new show called Vagrant Queen, which is on Sci-Fi, that she created, wrote, and directed. So, Jem, go.
All right, go.
So we're going to kind of talk a little bit first, before we get into Vagrant Queen, just about who you are and kind of the beginning of your journey to get to the point where you're show running. So sure. I was just curious, like, you arrived from London, you've probably, I imagine, had a directing career in London, and were trying to figure out how to start from scratch here. So what was it like first arriving in Vancouver and figuring out, how am I going to take over this place?
That was that as well. I arrived 10 years ago. I studied film in London, so I had a 4-year film program there. And then I graduated, I'd made some shorts, I was excited, I was ready to go, and the recession hit. And there was no film or TV going on in London at all, there was nothing. So I stuck it out for a bit, but you know, I'd always wanted to move to Vancouver. I have some family here, and I grew up visiting. So, you know, I made the move 10 years ago, and really just started, I was making all my connections again. I started with web videos, so I would make small commercials, corporate videos. Gradually, I got into music videos, and I started a little boutique production company that I co-ran with someone else. And I did that for a number of years, thinking, you know, this is going to get me closer to where I want to be, which is, you know, writing, directing, film, and TV. So this was my paid job, where I got to, you know, I still got to film, I still got to, you know, work on my skills in shooting, in cinematography, in editing. But, you know, after a few years, it wasn't getting me there. On the side, I kept up, you know, shooting a lot of short films. And music videos, whenever I could, I would approach a lot of local bands or bands I just liked and say, hey, I will make a music video for like next to nothing. Are you interested? And most of the time they were. I just kept shooting, even when no one was paying me. And eventually built up a reel and a sort of a style that was, you know, slowly becoming my own. And then the projects started gradually getting bigger until I was able to leave the production company I'd set up and jump full-time into directing, and I started as a director for hire. So in half hours I started in, and TV movies, and then gradually, you know, the projects got bigger and bigger.
So what was the moment, you know, there's a big gap there between doing corporate videos, web videos, music videos, and getting hired to do it.
Sure.
So what was that gap there, and what were the things you did to kind of break through it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was a few things. My work in music video really did help me, and like I said, I would approach a lot of bands and just keep building on that, on those reels. And then was lucky enough to make a music video for Ringo Starr, who's in this little band called the Beatles. So that actually really helped. And then
how did you find him, or how did you get connected?
It was through this marketing company who were looking for up-and-coming music video directors, and they were sort of pairing these directors with artists, and based off your reel, they would choose who they wanted to work with. And through through that, a year later, Linkin Park picked up a couple of my some of my work as well for their promo stuff. So music video was going well, but it wasn't getting me where I wanted to go as quick enough. And then,
were you writing in that time as well?
I was writing. I was always writing. I've never stopped writing. I was writing short films. I was writing web series. Yeah.
And was that stuff getting made, or was it going into your drawer of stuff I've written that one day I'll make?
I was making a few short films, like paying for them myself, and you know, back when it was, you know, everything was being shot on a 5D. So, you know, we'd have a 5D, and we would go out on a weekend and shoot these shorts. Even if it never kind of, you know, didn't get into any festivals, at least, you know, there's a few really cool looking shots that you would put on your reel. And then I was asked to do a music, sort of around the same time as Crazy Eights was happening. I was involved with Crazy Eights for a few years. I DP'd a project the year before, and then the next year I was, you know, lucky enough to be one of the six filmmakers chosen. So I did that short. And around about the same time, I...
got a phone call.
I got a call. I did a music video for a local TV show. The show was called The Switch. Tina over there was involved in it as well. Hi, Tina. And I shot their music video, or directed their music video. They really liked it. They got some small funding to make a six-part first season, and they were looking for a director, and I just made their music video, and they enjoyed the experience, and so asked me, and that was sort of around the time of Crazy Eight. So with those two things together, it got me my first ultra-low-budget TV movie. The next TV movie was a bit more money, and then I made my own web series with StoryHive. Called Android Employed. So I created that, I wrote and directed it. And it was around about this time that I was looking for those bigger projects and met Zach, and was like, and as you said, it was a funny meeting because I went to the studio that had this meeting, hearing that there was a slot available for episodes. They thought they were meeting someone for the slot available for shadowing. So I was there like, okay, I'm ready for this. So I was like, yeah, so we've got, you know, there's a shadow position left. And I just said, you know, like, thank you, but I'm interested in this one. If it doesn't work out, please consider me for, you know, future projects, the next season, whatever that is. You know, it was a great meeting.
Yeah.
but you know, I kindly declined that and said, please keep me in mind, and said, you know, I would, if it's not this show, I'm going to be working on other things, other projects.
And I think that was the key. That first season you didn't shadow, but by the second season you had shot and directed
and
created
whole bunch more.
A whole bunch of stuff, because I think at that point then there was a lot of work to show the network, to be like, because I believe in you as a filmmaker, but at that point there wasn't a lot to show.
Exactly.
From a narrative kind of, oh look, someone's hired her before.
Yeah.
Sort of perspective, which is usually what you need to
do. At the time of that meeting, there was a lot of things I was either, you know, prepping or editing, so it wasn't out in the world. So it was like, you know, trust me, I can do this. And they're like, nah. And then, yeah, second season, the timing worked out on that. Yeah.
So what was the first time someone basically paid you to write, other than something you created yourself? Is that, did that ever happen, or was the first...
It's a good question. So, writing was always something I would do for myself. I would write, you know, basically the stories I wanted to direct. And that started in shorts. And then Android Employed was really the kind of first series I put together. So that was, I guess, so you win funding for that. You're technically not getting paid to write. Really, it was Vagrant Queen. But that only came about because on every show I've done, including the project I just worked with, the production company that made Vagrant Queen, I'd shot with them the year before and done a lot of work on the script we were working on. I'd done a rewrite.
So that was a sci-fi MOW, right?
Yeah, that was a monster movie called Killer High. And I'd done the rewrite on that script. So when this project came up, they kind of knew my work from that, and also were like, do you have anything else you can show us? You know, I think
you skipped one critical beat that I think you told me once that I think was really important, which is that you did this sci-fi MOW, and a lot of people, MOWs, my first movie was a sci-fi MOW, a lot of people's first jobs where they're actually paid to do something is an MOW. But you were able to not only do the MOW, but continue that relationship with the executives. And
yeah,
that was sort
absolutely.
Of ended up being the key, right?
Yeah, I'll chat about that as well. But just in terms of the writing,
right.
They'd seen that, and they asked if I had anything else, and I had a feature as well. I've written a few features that, you know, was sort of in the process of looking to get made, but I had the script. So when they wanted examples, they knew me as a director. They knew I could edit scripts, and then they could also see a bunch of other stuff I'd written and say, okay, cool, great, yeah, we like this. And that's how Vagrant Queen came about, or I was asked to write it as well. They knew they wanted me to direct it, but it was sort of kind of proving that I could write it as well. But yeah, the relationship was key for Killer High. It was the first time I'd worked with the company. And they were a Toronto-based company, and so a lot of the directors here already know, being a BC director, getting hired in Toronto is difficult because they'll use Toronto directors
it's
and they get the
difficult.
Tax credit. And it is. It's really difficult, but I really wanted the project. I love genre. It sounded super fun. I just had an outline. I didn't have a script yet, so I'd been sent an outline. And a call was set up between me and the producer in Toronto. So I put together a lookbook. I put together what I thought, based on this outline, I think it was a five-page outline, what I thought the film could look like or what I would do. It was a kind of a visual mood board with, you know, dream cast or who I think could play the four leads. And sent that to the producer just before the phone call, so he had something to reference while we were talking. And he forwarded that to Sci-Fi, and they loved the direction. They loved that I wanted to take it in. So I got
this is for Killer High, right?
This is for Killer High. And they had a great relationship. It's Blue Eyes Productions, Blue Eyes Pictures, sorry, and Sci-Fi. And they were fantastic to work with, and I just kind of continued those relationships. I'm a big comic book nerd, and would share new comics I've read that I thought would make great adaptations with both Sci-Fi and Blue Eyes.
And you got to meet Sci-Fi because their executives came to the set.
Yeah. And one of the execs at Sci-Fi, you know, became friends with because he's also a big geek, and we got to geek out over which comic books we were currently reading. And I introduced him to a lot, and he introduced me to a lot. And then I sent him a comic writer I liked, Magdalene Visaggio, who wrote Vagrant Queen. At the time, I was sending her with a few other of her work. Vagrant Queen was pretty new. But he checked out that one, and they really liked that. So
didn't they first tell you, well, we don't like any of these, and then they were like, oh wait, there's this other one we do like. And you
I pitched a few. Some were like, yeah, no, or we've got something similar. And then a couple months went by, and in that time, I directed You, Me, Her, an audience network show. I did the fourth season, and during that is when I got the call, like, oh, we just read this one. I love this one. And it was super quick, actually. I think, like, we laugh about how quick it went. It was greenlit because I think I wrote the script in November. In December, it was ready to go. And at the end of January, we were greenlit. And it was, cool, go make 10 episodes. And I left 2 weeks later for Cape Town.
Yeah, it did seem very strangely fast to everyone here. We were like, wait, what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
What's going on? So let's break down those 3 months a little bit more in detail, because I think that's the really interesting critical part.
Sure.
It's like, you've sent an executive a comic book, a bunch of comic books you like, at which they say no to all of them, and then there's one that you didn't, that was maybe in the pile, or they bring up, hey, this is actually pretty cool. Did they immediately think of you to write, or were they thinking of you to direct?
Yeah, to direct. They were bringing me on board because they wanted me involved, and you know, we weren't sure at the beginning what that looked like, if that was going to be a producing director, or how that would work, but...
How did you position yourself as a writer?
Blue Ice, actually, I mean, I would have totally jumped in, but we're on the first call, we're like, do you want to write the pilot? And I was like, absolutely. Cool, do you have a pilot? No. But I can do it. And so that's, you know,
you didn't have your other feature script.
I had my feature script. I had sort of half-hour scripts, and they'd seen my rewrites. They knew I could write, and I was like, look, you know, you want me involved, worst case is, you know, this, you know, you don't like the pilot, and we'll polish it up, we'll get someone else on, whatever, but I knew I could do it, and I love the genre, I love the story.
And then
I didn't
sleep
for a month.
Did you look at other pilots? Like, how did you look to what a pilot is, how long it is, where the act breaks are, like all the specifics of a pilot? How did you learn that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd read a lot of pilot scripts, but I didn't want to get bogged down too much with the act breaks. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people here know there's different act breaks for different, you know, networks, and sometimes, you know, you don't need to write for any. So I didn't want to, on my first draft, structure it around those act breaks. I wanted to just think about this. What's the story first? And that was what they were most interested in. The first draft I sent, Sci-Fi loved, and then it was a case of reworking that to fit in the act breaks we needed, which was a lot easier to do it that way around than structuring it from the beginning on what are these six acts going to be.
And was it based largely on the first few issues or the first issue?
Yeah, it was based, so there was, when we started writing, there were six issues, which became the trade paperback, the one book, and so we didn't have a lot for this. We knew at the beginning that this got picked up, it would be 10 episodes, so that's not a huge amount to go on the six issues. So the first issue actually, to me, had enough for the pilot. The setting of the first issue, the first 23 pages, was enough, I think, to build a pilot on it, and obviously I took that that setting, that location, that structure, and built in that. I was like, this is time to get to know these characters. And then the other issues sort of helped feed into what the other 9 episodes became.
And so this show basically went straight to series. There was no pilot. So what usually that happens when there's a huge showrunner or a really famous actor involved. And in this case, it was your first show, and most of the cast was unknown. So why was it that this show entered the show?
Yeah, I know. it really was crazy because I was up against, you know, networks have slots to fill and there's other pilots so they have optioned that they're looking at and, you know, we're not sure which one's going to go ahead. But honestly, we got such great feedback from the pilot. I was, you know, so nervous sending it in, but they loved it, and every time it kept getting sent to someone else, and I'm like, oh, here comes the no. It was like, well, they love it too. And I was like, okay, cool, what's next? And it's like, well, now it's going to this person. So it just, you know, that month or so was just like getting pushed around and waiting for that, like...
I kept saying, I think... my show is, like, getting close to going.
Yeah, I think it was that, I think, but maybe someone's going to read it and go, no. But they just kept going, yeah, we like it.
And did they ever speak about why they didn't shoot a pilot? Was there any specific reason for that?
No, I think it made a lot more sense as well financially to shoot the whole series together. Especially heading out to Cape Town to shoot it. Along with the pilot, you know, once they liked that and we knew that we were sort of in the running and they were considering us, a series Bible. I wrote a series Bible. So, you know, they knew where the story was going. They knew the first season arc. They knew I could direct, so they knew that it would look great and, you know, visually it would be there and they were happy with the story. So I think for them it made sense as well to just financially let's do it all 10 together.
So you get the green light. So what goes through your mind at that point?
It was bizarre because we'd been waiting. It was like, we feel like it's 99%, and then there's always the voice in your mind that's like, but it's not, this is ridiculous, it's not going to happen. Like, was that one person's going to be like, no. But I don't know. My wife's amazing. She was the one that's like, it's going ahead. Just pack your bags. Be ready. And I'm like, I don't know. But when it was greenlit, it was, I flew in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So I'm sure you suddenly got deluged with a whole bunch of new experiences.
Yeah.
The first one probably hiring writers.
The first one's writers, yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like to suddenly go from basically never been hired as a writer to now being hired as a writer and hiring other writers?
Yeah, it was okay. Well, I knew I wanted a small writer's room.
Why was that?
I think it was for my first one. I think it felt to me like it would be not only kind of easier to manage, but I had a pretty solid outline for the series and I wanted to kind of put a small team together that all our ideas could be heard. We could all kind of, you know, all the writers in the room were invested in it because they were all getting scripts. And to me it was more important that the room was small but the voices in the room, so we only had 4 people in the room, the voices in the room, you know, really understood the genre and the tone.
And how did you find them and how did you pick them?
So once we were greenlit, a lot of agents sent me
suddenly options. Everyone you know in the world wants a job.
Yeah. Yeah, and the production company had filtered some people too and they'd worked with people. I was looking at people that you know, that know the genre well, that are sci-fi fans, but didn't necessarily wasn't looking for that the same kind of tone. One of our writers, you know, was great with comedy, another was very good with drama, but we were essentially all kind of sci-fi nerds in the room. I would read what I enjoyed. I know from chatting to a lot of showrunners, they all have a different approach. What I enjoyed reading was someone's own script, their own story that they'd created, to get a feel for their voice and their style. And then if that writer also had a spec script from, you know, a well-known show, you know, whether that's Star Trek or Supergirl, whatever they'd chosen, that was great to see as well, because I could see, okay, how their voice had been adapted to work for something already established.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I ended up choosing writers that sort of were, we all loved the genre, but we all had a kind of a different approach to how we worked in that genre. One of the writers I chose, actually, I was a fan of her, is she's a comic book writer, Mariko Tamaki, and she, I'd been a fan of her for a few years and heard that she was getting into script writing, so asked us to read some of her work, and the scripts were great, so that kind of worked out well.
So in the time we have left, let's chat about sort of, you've got your writer's room, you've... Mm. What was it like breaking your first season and dealing with sort of the network's expectation of that?
Yeah. So the beginning of the writer's room, I went in with, you know, the arc I'd planned for the season, a rough outline for at what episodes 2 to 10 would be. And then, you know, the great thing about being in a room with other creatives is that they throw things that are better as well than that at you. The beginning, the first few weeks was really just kind of refining what that arc was going to be and just talking about the characters. We didn't really even get into specifics on episodes for a few weeks in until we really had an idea of who all these characters were. So I created quite a few as well that aren't in the comic books. So there's a lot of stuff that we had to work out. From there, we sort of took it in chunks. We sort of concentrated on episodes 2, 3, and 4, and get scripts ready for those, share first drafts, give each other notes and kind of move on from there. I was sending the network outlines as we went, and it's... I don't know, I think I've been spoiled with this first show, because anyone else now that I work with, if they come back with more than 3 notes, I'm going to be, what is this? because sci-fi were great, and you know, any notes they did have were often just really great, actually things that were like, oh, that really actually helps story, that's a great idea. I think there was hardly a time that I was like, you know, I didn't agree on a note. And, I mean, that's just so uncommon.
Do you think there's something you had done early on that led to that?
Yeah, I think the tone of the pilot really set out what this was going to be. And so, you know, everything we were throwing at them kind of it made sense, you know. They already knew where the story was going. So we had the main plot points already... when we went in, and sci-fi knew this. And like I said, it's pretty much a road trip in space, and so it really became about, well, how do we get from here to here? There was so much to build on that wasn't in the comics, so it really became a case of, well, what do we want to see? What would be cool to do here? We could do anything. What planet do we want to go to? It was honestly a dream project. It was important for me as well to have you know, LGBT representation in the show as well. And so early on, before, you know, we even started the writers' room, I spoke to Sci-Fi about that. And, you know, they were fully on board. It kind of became a case of, and what about this character gay? And I was like, well, you know, not everyone needs to be gay. I'd be happy with that too. But it just, yeah, such a supportive group of producers on this. It really was just so fun to. It was really a case in the room of, well, what's you know, what do we want to see? What's not been done? How do we want to get from this point to this point?
Were there any big lessons or things you were surprised by going through sort of your first major writers' room experience and writing experience and all that? Like, were there things you wish you had known when you started that process?
Yeah, just specifically in the writer's room. Yeah, I think we had a good amount of time in the room, and before we went to camera we had all 10 scripts as well, which is quite rare. And for the most part, the scripts were production ready because as a director, I knew what we were writing. We could actually shoot for the budget we had. So there was, you know, there was kind of smaller tweaks to be made. But there was an episode in particular that I had to completely rewrite on set, and my writers had already left. And a lot of figuring out how I would work as a showrunner with other writers. It's not a great answer. I'm still sort of processing the writer's room. I do know now, like, you know, for the next season and another show that might be going ahead, that it's not necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily look for genre writers. I found actually what was most important was understanding tone. Really, when it came down to it in the writer's room, your knowledge of sci-fi wasn't that important. You know, like when I would edit scripts, if I wanted to put any references in or in the room, we could kind of come up with that stuff together. But it really didn't matter. It was more about if you could understand the tone and if your voice worked for that. So moving forward in the second season, absolutely, I would be reaching further out in terms of writers. I wouldn't necessarily be looking for genre writers.
Makes sense. And then moving into production and prep, something you had lived in many times, but now you were hiring directors for the first time.
Yeah.
So what was that?
Oh my goodness. I can tell you that it's all the directors in the room, it's true. Showrunners are terrified. It's very scary.
Terrified of the director because...
Yeah, we've always been told, oh, they're scared, it's a risk, but it is. You are giving your baby over to someone and trusting that they can do it. Even when I directed the pilot, so I could set out the look and the feel and the visual language, but you're still putting that in the hands of and kind of letting it go to someone else, and it's terrifying. So I would, and again, the same as writers, I was sent a lot of directors from the company or from agents. A lot reached out to me. And I would look at reels. Reels were important to me. And IMDb is always the first thing. I would always look at that even before, even if a resume was sent emailed to me, you know. I would look at IMDb before that. It's a lot quicker and easier when you're being sent a lot of people. And then I would look at reels. Obviously, you know, we're told as directors to shoot an hour long, you need to have made an hour long, and that's the tricky situation that we're often in because we need that first hour long. I wasn't necessarily looking for that. What I was looking for was that you had invested in your voice, because for me, being a writer, when you get into sci-fi, sorry, director as well, getting into sci-fi is tough. You know, you're not just going to get hired straight off the bat to go and make big budget VFX, stunt, action stuff. So I would spend time and my own money making sure I shot that stuff for me so I could have it on my reel. And it was important for me to see that in a director as well, that, you know, if you're not getting paid to do it, that you have been investing in your voice and the sort of, filmmaking stories that you wanted to tell. That was kind of more important to me. Than having done an hour long before.
That makes sense. And so working with directors, what was that experience like once you had actually hired them? Because you weren't also running a writing room at that point. So what was it like sort of working with directors, and what were the things that went well and the things that you wish you had known?
That's a good question. I think moving forward, investing time at the beginning for tone meetings is important. And especially in the first season, because, you know, when I did Mech, I could watch the first season and see that visual language and know all those characters. And when you go into a first season and the other directors are all sort of figuring it out, and I could tell them as, you know, as everything I knew about the characters and they could see what I'd shot for the first block. There's still a lot of gaps there. And so a lot of time on set was making sure, just pulling, you know, the director aside and talking about tone or interpretation of a scene. So I think, you know, moving forward, I would like to spend a lot more time just one-on-one with the directors before we go to camera. It's a little tricky in this one because, you know, when I'm directing my block, they're prepping their block, and so time became an issue, and often times I got to hang out with them was when they're directing and I'm on set, I'm sitting with my coffee in a chair just...
Stop. And so what was it like having that world be built physically?
There aren't words. It was an incredible experience. So the spaceship especially, we have a spaceship called the Winnipeg in the ship. And she's huge. And, I helped design the ship. And in prep, the art crew were phenomenal. In prep, we actually used VR for a lot of stuff before we would build our sets. So I could put on our VR headset and walk around our ship, our spaceship, and kind of like, okay, actually, this room's feeling too small. Let's move this wall up here. It was a great experience. I don't know how I'll not work with VR anymore. But the first time I walked onto the set, it blew my mind away. They'd done such an amazing job, and it was just so surreal to be in this set build. And just thinking, a couple months ago, I was just drawing, creating this. And I had another similar sort of experience when we were shooting episode 2. Scene I mentioned, this karaoke scene. Sorry, I promise no spoilers. but it was a scene that I remember coming up with in the writer's room and thinking, someone's going to stop me at some point, but this is fun, I'm just going to write it. And then like, no one said anything, and no producers came back, so I was like, I'm just going to keep going with it. But once we start prepping it, someone will come back and say something. And no one ever did, and the art department started building the things I'd written, and I was like, okay. It's on paper, it seems like an impossible thing, but I think everybody's so excited to do it, and we would find a way to do it within our budget. So when I walked on set and looked at what they had built and seen, you know, again, just having this idea in a room that you would never think would go ahead, and seeing that they had, you know, created these giant cages suspended 20 feet in the air above fire, and it was very surreal.
Awesome. Yeah. And then that you mentioned there was a script that you had to rewrite during production.
Yes.
Sort of what went wrong there and what was the lesson from that?
Yeah, so for the most part, the scripts moving forward were all shootable. I knew what we could do. But there was one particular episode that was in a later block, and so we were sort of running out of money by the time we got to this one, right?
So suspended cages over giant pools of
water. I spent a lot of money on suspended cages. It was one particular episode that it actually worked out for the better, that I'd get a tweaks to do throughout the show, but this was kind of like, none of this works, and you know, you need to basically rewrite. And because of the location that we'd found all the locations in prep for all of the blocks, which was great, and the location we'd found wasn't working. By the time all of art and stunts got to see it, it was like, this is going to be an issue, and to fix these issues is going to just be too much money. And so I rewrote it. I had the beginning, it had to pick up from here, and it had to end here because the next episode had to start there. And all those beats needed to happen. But it was tough. I didn't sleep for a bit, but I spoke to all of the crew, and you know, it was a great experience. They would come to me and say, our special effect team, for example, were like, well, you know, like, we've actually built you all these explosions that you've paid for and haven't used yet. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I wrote that in. And I spoke to art, and they were like, well, we can do this, this, and this to build this set. And I was like, that's a great idea. So I was able to write knowing what we could do, and it's one of my favorite episodes. Now episode 7 for everyone. Is anyone that's interested? And it turned out really well. So when I was able to write knowing exactly what we could do and kind of bringing in everybody's voices on what they could bring to the table to make it look the best possible. On an episode that we were worried about budget, it ended up looking better than some of the others.
Right.
Yeah.
Was there anything that came similar to that where you're kind of transitioning from not only filmmaker, but you're kind of also becoming boss?
Yeah.
You're becoming a producer, you're becoming sort of... You hold in everyone on set, you have their job in your hands as far as if they have come to work the next day or not. Was there, and collaborating with them and trying to lead people for a long amount of time, what was the experience of sort of becoming the boss, and what were the things you learned doing that you realized you want to carry with you moving forward?
For me, I found show running, ties in a lot of what a director and a writer and a producer are doing. And when you come from indie film, you're doing all of that anyway. And as a director on set, I've always wanted to have a kind of open, an open, positive environment. That's always been important. And then so when you're the showrunner, you reach a lot more people that you don't as a director. And so from the beginning, it was very important to kind of set that tone. And it made for such a great experience.
How did you set that tone?
By listening to everybody's voices. Everybody, when you're working with low budget, often people are, people will go above and beyond when they enjoy what they're doing. And everybody wants to enjoy what they're doing. Everyone wants to wake up and go to a job that they love. And everybody on the crew, no matter who they were, had something to offer. And I found that such an incredible experience. Sometimes it wouldn't work, and sometimes it was a great idea. And I think as a showrunner, you have to know when an idea is better and, you'd lose your ego. I think it would be very easy to be, kind of top of the chain of a production and have that ego, but, you get rid of that. The production just becomes so much stronger. And everyone felt like they were part of it. Everyone felt like they were, we were creating something that we hadn't seen on TV before. That excited everybody. Everyone felt that they were kind of, free to kind of make a suggestion, I think that it created one of the best environments I've ever worked in.
Awesome. So I'm going to be asking questions in a moment, so everyone start thinking of your brilliant questions. There's two questions I want to ask before that. What was the hardest part of making the show?
The hardest part was definitely managing the budget, which it probably always is, but you're sort of aware of that as a director, but your job is to go and do the best that you can. But as a showrunner, I know what's getting spent and where, and have to maintain a look and style that we'd set out in the pilot and that we wanted to produce. It's not the best answer, but that really, every day, on top of the creative, you are juggling that. You're juggling how can we keep this show looking as good as we are with what we've got left. And another difficulty during production, which I'm sure a lot of people in the room know, is just how much you have to shoot in a day. I was coming off You, Me, Her shooting 9 pages a day and going onto a sci-fi shooting 9 pages a day, except these weren't talking heads, these were stunts and fights in those 9 pages. you can only do it by relying on your team and on your crew. And they'll help you get through that. Again, if they feel involved, they'll you'll make your day.
Awesome.